Okay, so if anybody was wondering why the lovely Crystal hadn't reviewed any yet, she actually only had one issue this batch. So coming up, Crystal with iVampire.
Yeah, Richard's going to do the creative team for me.
Okay, the writer's name is Joshua Hale Fialkov, and the artist is Andrea Sorrentino.
Well, firstly, let me just say I'm not really much of a vampire fan, but gave this one a go. On the first page, I found it very unclear of what was going on. The artwork was too muddy. I couldn't see that there was a person on the ground until the stake got driven into his body. Then we get to the second page, and it's not made terribly clear why he staked the guy or who the character is. Is it the same as the male lead character from the rest of the book, or is it someone else? I found the conversation easy enough to follow, but it's often not clear who's speaking. The scenes shift too many times, and it gets confusing as to the location. And while I actually like the inky artwork style, I found there's not enough definition in the characters to make them recognisable. So if I picked up another book with these same characters in it, I probably wouldn't know who they were. I found the storyline rather boring, nothing I haven't sort of heard before, and I gave it one look. Also, there was a slight mention of the cover, and another sexy female character with very little on. In fact, has she got anything on, or is that just all tattoos?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell, isn't it?
At least the man's got some pants on. It doesn't fail as a first issue, but it just fails as a book.
As an interesting issue.
It fails at all, and it won't keep me reading at yeah. all.
I do want to give a bit of credit here to Marcello Maiolo, who is the colourist on the book.
It's colourist week here at NCP.
Well, this one is, I think, it's important to mention the colourist here because, unlike the writer, the colourist does a very good job of distinguishing between the flashback scenes and the current scenes in the way he colours the book.
Great.
There's a lot of red and black and brown used in the current scenes, whereas there's sort of cooler, sort of pastel-y colours and a lot of blue used to the flashback scenes. So the colourist here actually helps me understand the story in a way that the writer doesn't. And so I just wanted to give him a bit of credit for that. Look, I do have to agree with a lot of what Crystal said. This story is clearly aimed at the Twilight audience. There's very angsty vampire love sort of stuff happening in it, and yes, the couple have broken up and she's gone off on a vampire-y rampage, and clearly the plot of the story is that he's going to stop her, but it's just it just plods along. It's a little bit it really does sink into melodrama, and really bad melodrama at that.
It's vampire soap.
Yeah, exactly right. It's Vampires 90210, and it's really just not my sort of thing. There's really nice artwork. It's very moody artwork, but the story doesn't really match the mood of the artwork. The artist has gone out to create a very horror look for the book, and yet the story is all angst and whininess. Look, it wasn't a terrible first issue.
It was much better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and it's certainly better than the cover suggests.
I know, the cover's awful.
The cover suggests out-and-out Twilight approach.
Straight Twilight.
Yeah, so it's done,
They look a bit more elvish than vampire-ish.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal with the cover is. Honestly, I would have much preferred the artist who did the actual interiors, Sorrentino, to do the cover, because he sets a good mood for the book, and I think a good moody cover probably would have helped as well. Look, I'll give it two Lukes. But, yeah, it didn't really sort of wow me in any way. And nothing that I can't find in a dozen other vampire stories.
Well, like I said, it was definitely better than I thought it was going to be. But I have to agree with you. I mean, if without the coolness of the art, this would have been completely dead for me. I mean, it's just, the story is, it's laboured. It tries so very hard to be cool. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. I mean, she slaughters an entire town. I mean, it was easy to follow. I could follow that. It was fine. But she slaughters an entire town, turns them all into vampires, and not a single cape shows up.
Yeah.
Like, why the Justice League not appeared? I mean, we'll read about it later with Justice League Dark. I mean, one person goes a bit nutty, the Justice League show up.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, an entire town is wiped out, nobody says anything.
And they've made specific mention of the Justice League. The what's the main character's name in this?
Andrew
makes specific mention. Do you think you could take on, you know, Superman, Green Lantern, and Wonder Woman?
Yeah, and then she says, "Well, you know, most of us will die, but a lot of them will as well."
Mm. That was confusing to me because I didn't know that the two were actually even related.
Mm.
Yeah, but the art is excellent. I agree with the flashbacks versus present day colouring and stuff like that. Very, very cool. Kind of a Jay Lee sort of thing.
Very much a Jay Lee thing.
Not as good as Jay Lee, but you know, tried. Mm. And I thought that was quite good. But yeah, the story was just nothing to me. Mm. So I give it 2 licks.
I agree with a lot with what has been said. The artwork is good, although I do agree with Crystal about the artwork being unclear, particularly Mary and the girl he finds amongst the bodies.
Yeah, they both look the same.
I thought they both looked the same.
Yeah.
And because there was no delineation between what was going... it wasn't clear on what was going on in the town just yet, I actually thought he had found her and was getting ready to kill her.
Mm.
Like, that had... In my head, I thought, okay, there's been a fight before the book is opened. He's won and he's, you know, going in for the kill.
Oh, yeah, I see.
There was nothing to...
Mother said you would say that.
Mother said you would say that. And it's kind of like, hang on, you actually look like... Okay, and if she's the daughter, that's fine.
Her biological daughter. I think it's more in terms of, like, the sire.
Yeah, it's the sire.
Then there needs to be some delineation between the characters, because I thought that they were both the same.
Mm.
I thought they were both Mary. The plotting is all over the place. The flashbacks and what's going on in the present day, very muddy, very unclear. If this is meant for a wider readership, there is nothing that the wider readership, as has been said, that will that they can't get from better stories and books in comics and in other media. If this is meant for the Twilight crowd, and in particular for adolescent girls, I've got no problem with that. But first of all, there's nothing that I can't get from Twilight. Also, if that's the audience, then there's nothing else for the adolescent female crowd to... There's nothing else in what's been released for a teenage girl to latch onto as well. Supergirl, maybe, but there's nothing in the wider scope. So
I don't think it's a teenage girl thing, because the guy's not sexy enough. I mean,
Given the angsty nature of the story, I was thinking, okay, who is actually going to be... Who is this aimed at? And it's not aimed at us. And I don't think this book is meant for us. It's not aimed at their
13 to 21.
So then who is it aimed... Who is the book for?
Yeah, exactly.
Teenage gothy girl,
man. I just don't think it's... Yeah. I think they tried to aim it for the girls and it didn't quite work.
And I think part of another reason why that's failed is because there's not... Also, if this does get adolescent girls in, there's nothing else in certainly DCU, apart from maybe Supergirl, to keep them, and maybe Wonder Woman, to keep them in.
Well, hopefully it's not...
Just because they're girls, though, it doesn't mean they can automatically go for girl characters.
I'm not saying they go for girl characters, but there's nothing in the... What else has been done that is aimed at
Birds of Prey?
Birds of Prey, maybe.
Superboy, maybe?
Superboy, maybe. Well, maybe Teen Titans as well, but, it still seems to be aimed at...
I think they've made it pretty clear that they're not interested in what girls are thinking or care about. I mean, Starfire proves that to me.
Mm. It's a token girl issue.
Token girl issue. Yeah, this gets one look from me.
Awesome. Okay, moving on to Richo with Justice League Dark.
Justice League Dark is written by Peter Milligan and drawn by Michael Janin. I just want to preface my review here by saying that DC could not have put together a team more appealing to me than the one they have here. Zatanna, Deadman, Shade the Changing Man, John Constantine, Madame Xanadu. I absolutely love all of those characters.
They should have named the team the David Ridges and All Stars.
That's right. It's like Peter Milligan sat down and went, that guy in Melbourne, which characters would he like to see on this magical team that I'm putting together? Yeah, so I might be a little bit biased in my review of Justice League Dark, but for me, this was actually the book of the week. I think it does an excellent job of establishing a little bits and pieces about who these characters are without necessarily giving you everything you need to know about them. But there's enough there that I'm intrigued by all of the characters. I don't know if it's new reader friendly. As I said, I love these characters so much that, that could just be me. But I liked the fact that it does establish certain elements of who the characters are, and they are all kind of messed up to one degree or another. The framing sequence with Madame Xanadu reading the cards, I think, works really well as a way of leading in and out of the different scenes in the book. More importantly, it establishes why this book should exist, why the Justice League needs to have a team like this working with them, because we're shown very clearly that there are certain magical threats that the Justice League can't necessarily handle, and that they need magical experts to come in to deal with these kind of problems. So we're given a reason why the team exists. We're introduced to the characters. There's a mystery set up involving June Moon and multiple versions of herself that are appearing, getting hit by cars, and there's some other very weird things happening in this book. But one of the things that appealed to me is that once upon a time, before there was Vertigo, DC produced effectively superhero horror comic books that were a little bit weirder and just sort of, you know, off-center from the usual fare. And this was very reminiscent of that sort of approach. I'm talking about things like Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, Doom Patrol and Animal Man by Grant Morrison, and of course, Peter Milligan's Shade the Changing Man. So this was very much a throwback to that, and I appreciated that. I was never a big fan of separating those characters from the regular DCU anyway. So seeing them sort of back here, seeing them interacting with the DCU again, that was a very big selling point for me. But yeah, but overall I think it worked well for me as a first issue. Gave me enough of the characters, a good aspect of the, good story points, sets up a nice mystery. There's some really nice, clear artwork here. I found it very easy to follow. And the characters looked distinct from one another. The facial structures, it's very easy to distinguish, say, between Madame Xanadu and Zatanna, for example, in that their facial structures are very different, their costumes are different. So it works well in that respect. And yeah, as I said, I just loved the story, loved the characters, loved the artwork. And I give this 4.5 Lukes.
I disagree. I felt there was too much going on all at once. The reader was expected to already know who the Justice League are. I don't think it was explained clearly enough why there was a need for this Dark League. I gave it 1 look, although I did really enjoy the artwork.
Yep, the artwork is absolutely awesome. I really liked it, and I'm also a big fan of most of those characters, so yeah, I was cool with it. It has a very interesting story. I like the fact that back in the Vertigo days, you could have things like the events of I, Vampire, I mean, which would have been a Vertigo book back in the day, where you could have whole towns wiped out and, you know, Batman wouldn't show up and it would make sense. But I like the fact that now that this is integrated into the DC Universe, they have a supernatural event occur and the Justice League show up. Which is, you know, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. I mean, Batman's investigating, you know, with help from Zatanna and Supes, Wonder Woman and Cyborg should, you know, go on the front lines. It all makes perfect sense to me. Yeah. I also like the little nod to, they've obviously kept Superman's magical deficiency thing happening. So he gets affected far worse than any of the others do.
I didn't even know who Zatanna was. She just showed up. Who's that?
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, you obviously wouldn't understand who Zatanna was, but it's... We know who these characters are.
That's
what
fails
as
first issue. First issue fails.
I can understand that, but I know who Zatanna was. So I thought it was cool. So I also, my favourite bit actually was Shade and his girlfriend creature entity thing.
Kathy, that he just
makes up and then just integrates. And so it's just weird and awesome. You just don't expect to see a scene like that in the same comic where Supes shows up.
Well, it certainly sets a tone for the way the book is going to be. This book is going to be a little bit weirder. The characters are going to be a little bit off balance. And I think, I appreciated that because it is different from just regular Justice League.
I would prefer to have seen a bit more John, but that's just because, I'm a fan.
That's where it's disappointing that it fails as a first issue, because I like weird and I'd like to get involved with it, but I was completely put off by not knowing. I felt like an outsider.
But now that, since you like weird, and so now that you've gotten past the point of the first issue, can you then see yourself continuing on to the others?
No.
Okay, cool. Anyway, well, I liked it. I thought it was really good. And like I said, the artwork was awesome. So I gave it 3.5 looks.
This does what Justice League failed to do, which is, you know, actually introduce us to all the characters. Mm-hmm. Even if they haven't formed the team yet, that's fine. But we've got an idea about who the players are, at least. A bunch has been said about the artwork, and I agree. This is effectively a Vertigo... When is a Vertigo book not a Vertigo book? When it's... This book, effectively, it it just in terms of time, but also in the way that the story is told, going from, you know, dark place to main character to problems with another character back to one of the other characters, the jumping in and around the nasty stuff is simply a core staple of the Vertigo books, featuring a whole bunch of characters who I love. Constantine in particular. I would have liked to have seen more Constantine as well, because he is such a good character. Whilst I did like the Shade bit, it probably wasn't reader friendly in that you did need to have read Shade, the Changing Man, before having read this, so you knew who Kathy was, so you knew what their relationship was.
I disagree.
Was.
I haven't read Shade, the Changing Man.
Haven't you?
And I understood the thing. I mean, to me, it was brand new. I mean, it was a rebooted sort of thing, whereas, I mean, yeah, so this guy is freak. He's a freaky guy, and he's so twisted that he has to create his own girlfriend out of magic or whatever it is that he uses. I didn't have a problem with that at all. So actually, yeah, because I haven't read the original Shade. I didn't know who June was either. So I had to, but I was cool with that.
I disagree with one point you guys have made. I'm glad that we didn't get more Constantine just yet. Because I love John Constantine, but let's face facts.
He takes over.
When John Constantine enters a scene, that's it. Everybody else is just window dressing for him. He completely dominates scenes.
Constantine is so awesome, but even when he's not Constantine, that he's awesome. Like, I love the planetary issue with the guy who's
with
quite
the
clearly
wannabe John, the one that becomes Spider Jerusalem at the end.
It's awesome stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, I think if you would have put John Constantine in, he just would have stolen the show from everybody else. And I think it's important that you establish the rest of the characters, especially, they are lesser known characters.
Hmm.
Constantine is probably the most famous character in this book.
Hmm.
I think it's probably
Wonder Woman and Cyborg.
Yeah, okay, excluding the regular Justice League, but as far as the actual team itself goes. So I think it's important that you don't have him overshadow it just yet. I mean, you know, when they come together, he is going to completely dominate. So, and I'm waiting for that scene because it's going to be fantastic.
I'm also waiting to see if there's a correlation between the Xanadu in this and Xanadu in Demon Knights. I mean, obviously it's the same chick. So I just want to see how it all connects and stuff. Really cool.
Yeah.
And I love that final page of the future looking back. Very Fall of the Mutant style.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so top-notch book of the week for me, 4.5 looks.
Cool.
But I must admit, I do have to agree with Crystal's point.
Yeah.
It is probably not the most reader-friendly book. But as far as non-reader-friendly books go, as you've stated, there's still obviously things there that still worked, even if you're not familiar with a character like Shane.
Well, that's the only reason I didn't give it 4, actually. I mean, I was going to give it 4, but I had to bump it down because it's not new reader-friendly at all. New reader-friendly, if you don't...
I still think it's more new reader friendly than, say, Green Lantern number 1.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
the Green Lantern books have all failed as new readers.
They've all failed as first issues.
It's just, I mean, I'm not, some of them have been, you know, okay first issues, but as new readers, just come on. I mean, if you haven't read the past couple of years of Green Lantern stories, you have no idea.
Yeah.
So Justice League, there you go. Right up there with All Star Western is our favourites for this round. So coming up next, myself with Teen Titans. Okay, so Teen Titans is written by Scott Lobdell, a longtime comics industry person, and penciled by Brett Booth, from formerly of the Wildstorm universe and various stuff. Okay, so it's standard Brett Booth artwork. If you're familiar with his artwork, it hasn't changed all that much. It's good for teenagers. He's very good at doing sort of the trim skateboarder type body. I'd like to see a sort of a Spider-Man, Peter Parker sort of deal with him. So, you know, lean frames and stuff. But all the adults all look very strange. So, not too sure it works for adults and stuff. But a good choice for a teen book, at least that works. The story is basically the formation of the team, not counting some of the members. So it does a bit of a Justice League. It shows the entire team on the cover, but doesn't introduce it doesn't have everybody come into the team. But it does at least show you the other members in sort of in a pretty cool little... scene where Robin is looking at news reports and stuff like that. But it mainly focuses on the mentioned Robin, who's called Red Robin, a former psychic of Batman, and Cassie, who doesn't like to be called Wonder Girl, but is Wonder Girl. Don't understand why Cassie seems so reluctant to activate her powers and smack the fake cop guy that's attacking her. I mean, it's kind of odd. I mean, she seems quite timid. And it's like it's either a really bad acting performance or it's just inconsistent storytelling. Because then when she activates her powers and kicks some butt. She's really rude and antagonistic to Tim, who's, you know, one of the nicest people in the world. It's kind of strange. I didn't quite understand it. Maybe I just didn't read it right. Tim is cool. I mean, Tim is just basically Tim, the same as pre-reboot. Cassie, they've changed her. I mean, this is not the usual Cassie. She's, like I said, she's rude, she's antagonistic, doesn't like to be called Wonder Girl, which, you know, she knows she's, that's what she's going to be called anyway, unless they change it to Power Girl, maybe, who knows. But she does look cool, and she does kick a lot of butt. The actual issue itself, though, I found, other than the cool sort of Red Robin sequences, actual issue itself, I thought, was pretty lackluster, to be honest with you. I mean, nothing much really happens that you haven't seen a billion times before. I mean, it's, if you ever read a Scott Lobdell or even a Brett Booth pencil comic before, you've seen it all before. I did like the bit where Robin was looking at all the different newscasts that were showing all the different superpower teenagers and stuff. That was pretty cool. I did like the metahuman teenager menace angle. It was it's like classic X-Men sort of stuff, which is pretty cool, you know, superpower teenagers running amok. That was pretty cool, but and it was a nice little parable for the no one understands teenagers, you know, and sort of thing. So that was all right. One particular scene that I really didn't like was the scene where Cassie's ripping apart the auto-controlled chopper. There's some computer scans occurring of various parts of her body, but it's not clear where exactly these scans are coming from. Who is actually scanning her? It's not the chopper, because it's underneath there. It's not Tim, because he doesn't mention anything about scanning her abilities or powers or anything. You have to assume that it's you know, these mysterious nowhere people at some point. I don't know, it's not very clear, and I thought it was kind of silly and a pretty weak scene, in my opinion, and poorly drawn as well. And also in terms of the chopper, I mentioned earlier the Black Hawks logo and how it was cool, but it seemed kind of strange that, you know, they're so upset about getting it photographed and then put on the internet. It's like, well, then why bother having a logo? Well, here you have this computer-controlled, you know, attack chopper trying to kill people from this mysterious nowhere organization, which had been introduced previously in the Superboy comic. But then they have a nowhere logo on the side of their chopper. It's like, why? Not only is there a logo on the chopper, but it's a stupid logo. It's just an N and a W. It looks like it's been drawn by a five-year-old. And it's actually different to the same logo that's on their uniforms in the nowhere installation when you actually see Caitlin in the Superboy comic. It's very, very odd. I don't know what Brett was thinking at that particular time. But, you know, the bit at the end was pretty cool, and I'm interested in the formation of the team, but I'm probably not going to continue on. I don't know, unless something really, really cool happens in the next issue. I'm really not that interested. I'd be more interested, to be honest with you, if it was actually just Tim, because he was the best character in the book. I gave it 3 looks.
I absolutely have to agree with you with the depiction of Tim Drake here. I think he's really the driving force behind it, and he's an interesting character. He's competent. You see him doing some detective work. You see him trying to assemble the group. He's found out information about Nowhere. So he's actually really... I like his depiction here. He's really the only interesting character in the book. You've got Kid Flash at the start, who is, you know, impulsive and... you know, stuffs things up. And
I didn't even mention Kid Flash. That'll give you an idea of what little impact he had on
it. Yeah. Then you've got this horrible depiction of Wonder Girl, who is just, you know, she's like the token angry girl character who, yeah, you know, has to, you know, be all angsty and angry and beat people up and, you know, and it's just not really a very interesting or well-developed model for a character. I don't have any interest in reading about her. Don't have any interest in reading about Kid Flash. You know, Superboy shows up at the end, and I do kind of like the fact that he's going for a little bit of sort of interconnectedness between Superboy and Titans. I don't think without you having to really have read Superboy to understand that at the end there, that there is this Superboy in a tube and that they're going to release him. So he sort of kept them separate, but showing that if you are reading both books, you're going to get a sort of more fulfilling version of the story. You're going to get more detail filled in. So I do like that approach.
I get the feeling Super Teen Titans is the title where Gen 13 is going to show up.
Yeah. Well, obviously with Fairchild being introduced in Superboy and here as well. I really, really hope, more than anything else, that the Superboy outfit he's wearing in the tank at the end is what he wears in this series, yeah, and not the god-awful outfit he's wearing on the cover, which is just absolutely horrible, generic. It's just hideous.
Like he stepped right out of a gym. And what's with that wrist? He's got no wrist.
Yeah, I think
his tendon goes all the way from his shoulder down to his head.
Whereas I quite like the Superboy Tron outfit thing that he's wearing in first issue of Superboy, and here as in the last page here as well. But I just think the problem here, there is an interesting story with, you know, the teens, sort of the teen menace, and them being hunted down by Nowhere. But I just don't think they executed it as well as they could have. I would have actually placed a much more emphasis, even though he is the main character anyway, more emphasis on Tim and him tracking these people down. But then just giving me a little bit more interesting characterization with the other members of the Titans, I think would have worked a lot better. And it is a little bit all over the place. And I don't think the artwork helps in that respect either. I think there's some clumsy storytelling at times, that, as you say, with that scanning sequence, for example. And there are a few other moments there where I think just a cleaner, simpler approach to the storytelling would have worked a lot better. Look, I'm going to probably read a few more issues just to see where it's going, but it's really going to need a really top-notch second or third issue to really hook me in. I'll give it 2.5 looks.
So something I also want to mention is that it's the Titans. We had a pretty extensive conversation in our previous episode about Starfire, of course, and her mentioning, well, the listing of the names of the other Titans.
Yes.
I'd be very interested to see how exactly that works. I mean, who was right, who was wrong, how are the Titans incorporated?
Is this the first ever team of Titans? And if so, then who the hell was Starfire hanging out with in the past?
What was going on there? Yeah. And do they get a giant building that's shaped in the shape of a T?
Well, I hope so. I suppose it probably doesn't help, too, that they just released the new Teen Titans omnibus featuring the Wolfman and Perez stuff.
The classic.
Yeah, and the characterization that is in that is so top-notch that this book probably does suffer by comparison. And I must admit, I am reading that omnibus as we speak, so that probably didn't help.
You're not reading it as we speak, because you're talking as we speak.
Oh, no, I just got it sitting here.
And reading.
So when other people are talking, you're reading the Teen Titans on.
Yeah, I don't really have any interest in what you're saying anyway, so why not?
Harsh. I was going to say that's your dedication to nerd culture, but instead you have to fling some insults. Richo at his best.
It sounded to me like it was written by teens for teens, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I thought it introduced the characters pretty well. I would have liked a bit more explanation about what the metahumans are and how they came to be, coming at it from a new person perspective. Wasn't terribly interested in this story. I don't think I'd be picking it up again. But I do have to disagree about the Cassie character. I didn't have a problem with her because, like it or not, a lot of teenage girls are just like that. She just seems like a typical teenage girl to me. And dealing with some sort of weird powers is just another hassle in her life.
Nice. Okay.
Interesting.
I gave it two looks.
Well, from Britt Booth's, Ian Churchill knockoff like artwork to Scott Lobdell's rather pedestrian attempt to, tell a story, there wasn't a lot in this for me to like. The Tim Drake stuff has already been mentioned, and that really is the best stuff in the book. Everything around that is, you know, really just window dressing at best, and just superfluous at worst. I will not be picking this book up again. I'll give this one look.
Okay.
Wow. Harsh critic in the world.
Yeah, it's good to see that in full force, because that was harsh. I'm impressed.
Okay, well, keep it up, Luke, because you're up next.
Cool. Superman?
Superman.
Okay, Superman is one of the ones that I've been looking forward to. It's written with layout artwork by George Perez. The mighty George Perez, in my opinion, and with finishing artwork by Jesus Marino. And I like this quite a lot. In some respects, it's quite generic. The main focus of the action is Superman fighting a big fiery monster over the skies of Metropolis. But one of the nice things about that and the rest of the issue is just how dense and how tightly packed it all is. You know, I felt that I had to read every panel and read every word to get the story. It wasn't a quick read. It a good 20 to 15 minutes to get through the issue. It starts off being about the transition from the Daily Planet being just a print-based organization to being a more digital organization after having been taken over by Morgan Edge. And that creates a bit of conflict for Lois and Clark, because Clark's more of a traditionalist, wants to keep, you know, the print-based newspaper going, plus doesn't like Morgan Edge as a person, thinks he's quite shady and believes he's up to something, as opposed to Lois, who had been given a bit of a career opportunity from this, plus also sees the necessity of the evil, needing to go from a dying media to something that's more expansive and that will keep them all in jobs. And on the face of it, that might not sound particularly interesting, but it does provide you with some insight into the character and gives you a central basis for the relationship between Lois and Clark, the progressive versus the traditionalist stance, which is sort of what's always been at the heart of their relationship. Anyway, I love George Perez's layout work, and I think Jesus Marina does a great job finishing his work. I like the characterization. I recognised each character immediately, and each character was distinct. This is one of the few occasions where the Superman costume has worked. I think it's very nicely drawn.
I miss the red undies.
Nobody else does.
Yeah, I
like the new costume.
In the right hands, this costume looks good. In Jim Lee's hands, the costume looks terrible. Yeah, on the whole, I like it as a first issue. I want to see where the rest of the story is going before I say that this series is an absolute success. But on the basis of this, really enjoyable. 3.5 looks.
Cool, I agree with everything you said, and I'm also going to give it 3.5 looks.
I thought Clark looked a bit like Harry Potter.
You're not the first one to say that. They've been saying that on the websites as well.
In a couple of other books as well. This is another one where I thought it had up-to-date references such as Twitter and Lois is using digital media and whatnot, but the dialogue still reads as if it was written in the 1940s.
So, I thought that was a strength.
I don't know if that's a strength or a negative. I'm not sure. But it's just worth pointing out. And although it's a good start as a first issue, I'm a bit tired of the whole Lois and Clark thing. It's like, oh, he's going back to the start again. Now he's just work on it all over again, and they have to fall in love all over again. Oh, I just can't be bothered.
So you preferred it when they were married then, did you?
I don't know. And at the end, and this is probably a good thing, I was left with some questions. Where did this fire alien come from if he can't survive in space? Was there a ship? Is there more? If that's going to be explained in further issues, that could be a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's basically the mystery that they set up in the first issue.
It's so. Setting up for an ongoing thing. So on the whole, I gave it 3 looks.
I have to say, I thought this was a fantastic first issue. It's very densely written. But I'm never distracted. It never seems too wordy for me. But more importantly, it establishes everything I need to know about the status quo of the book, of the characters, of the supporting cast, of Metropolis as a city.
Yeah.
It's like everything is packed into this first issue. So I can pick it up, read it and go, okay, I know exactly where Superman is at now as a series. I know where Lois is and Clark's relationship is. I know where the Daily Planet is. And I thought that was fantastic. The other thing that I really loved about this is that it's a fully contained first issue story.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, it has a definite start, middle, and finish. It sets up some really nice subplots and mysteries to obviously carry the story through. But I feel like I've got a whole story contained in one issue, which is something that I didn't get from pretty much almost any of the other first issues. You know, so there's no decompression here, and I appreciated that. They gave me my money's worth.
Yeah, it's like the beginning of a new series.
Exactly right. And it worked really well. It really helped establish everything. And when you're doing a reboot or a relaunch of this nature, you need the first issues to be able to establish that. Right, so I mean, I'm very familiar, like a lot of people, with Superman, but now I know where Superman stands in this rebooted universe, and it only took one issue to do it, and I think that's fantastic. So I'm going to give this book 4 looks.
Awesome. I also like the fact that in action and in Justice League and stuff like that, it's like, oh, they don't like us, the supers, we're new, and it's like, oh, they're unsure, and he's an alien, and all that sort of stuff. Then you get Superman, which is set in the present day DC. Everybody loves him, and it's like, and they even mention it's like, remember when you could only leap tall buildings in a single bound, and now he can fly. It's pretty cool.
There was one slightly jarring thing with the issue, though, which is why I haven't ranked it a little bit higher, and that's the page that they dedicate to the big horn thing from Stormwatch. It just seemed like,
whereas
they
see Stormwatch 1 for more information.
I'm all for the sort of interconnectedness of a universe, but it just seemed like that page was just slapped in there to go, oh, look, we have an interconnected universe, And it actually, for me, it distracted from the actual story itself.
Yeah, it really took you out of
Yeah, the issue was flowing really nicely up until that point. And, look, it's a very minor thing, I suppose, at the end of the day. But it did kind of disrupt the flow of the issue a little bit.
Fair enough. All right, so still with Richo for the Savage Hawkman.
Hawkman number one is written by...
Savage Hawkman!
The Savage! My gosh, he's so savage. The Savage Hawkman number one is written by Tony Daniel with art by Philip Tan. And I do want to point out here the colorist Sunny Go. I think it's Go. It's G-H-O, so I'm going to assume that the surname is Go. But
sounds like an ice cream.
It does a bit, does it?
No, it sounds more like an orange juice. Sunny Go.
But I will say, the reason I mentioned Sunny Go is that I think he's actually pretty much the artistic hero of this book.
He does a good job.
He's actually created almost a painted look for Philip Tan's artwork. That's
going to be my exact comment. Great art with a painted look.
Yeah. Well, it helps the book, I think, stand out a bit from some of the more sort of generic artistic efforts in this relaunch. And the artwork is relatively good as well. There's a couple of moments where characters look a little bit uncomfortable in their poses. Like they're not standing like real people. But for the most part...
Wrong size underwear.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. But for the most part, it's...
Seriously, I call that... Sorry to interrupt you, but I call that... You know that standard generic female pose where the hip is cocked, one leg's out, off to the side, and one leg is straight? I call that my underwear is too tight pose. Yeah.
Well, there's certainly a couple of moments in here with some of the male characters where they do actually look like they're a bit sort of uncomfortable, and it's like they've been asked to stand in a certain way, and it's not a very natural way, and it just doesn't look quite right. But it's only a very minor point. Overall, the artwork is quite nice. Unfortunately, the story doesn't really live up to the artwork, and especially the colouring. It's a fairly standard story, but it sort of asks you to have a knowledge of who Hawkman is. We've come into his career at some point where he's, strangely enough, disillusioned or something. I don't really know what's going on there, but he's decided he's going to burn all of his, alien metal costume.
Priceless costume.
It's like he's driven out hillbilly style. He's driven out into the middle of the woods and pours some, alcohol on it to set fire to it. I'm thinking... Well, why? Like, why is the... What's brought the character to this point? Like, because there's no sort of real mention of it after that, because then we just get into the story. So I feel like I've come in halfway through a story that, I don't really know. I'm assuming maybe this is a follow-on from...
my world.
Yeah. Well, it seems like maybe this is a follow-on. Maybe something happened in Brightest Day, which I admit I haven't read, that I should know about or something. But my other big problem with it is that Carter Hall is just not a very interesting character in this book. And I'm a big Hawkman fan. I've always loved the character. But here he's just kind of, I'm complaining. I'm burning my stuff. Then I'm going to off and, investigate something that they found in the ocean. It's like, but where's the interesting character points? Okay, his burning of the costume might be an interesting character point if I knew why. If I knew what had actually... progressed him to that point, then I might be able to care a little bit more about the character. But it's just, there's really just not much to him in this book. He comes across as quite sort of two-dimensional and a little dull. There's a kind of interesting villain. We don't really know much about him. I'm hoping we'll find out a little bit more. And, there's a reasonably interesting sort of cliffhanger ending involving that villain and a transformation that villain goes through. But it just wasn't enough to really hold my interest. And I have to say, this book, as a Hawkman fan, this book was a bit of a disappointment for me. I give it 2 Lukes.
I agree with you. The art was awesome. Carter was boring. They've gone for like a sort of an Indiana Jones sort of style take on him, but he's not as cool as Indiana Jones, and he's not even as cool as the Carter we all know and love, who would just, happily beat anything to death and... big hairy chest and all sort of stuff. It was kind of odd. Yeah, the end bad guy did look cool. So, but in the end, he just looked like an armored up version of the bad guy from Fantasia.
The devil, the Ball Mountain.
It's odd. And also, I totally agree with the bit with the fire. I mean, yes, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, well, why is he doing what he's doing? And two, anybody who's familiar with Hawkman will know that it's flameproof. I mean, he's used it to protect himself from flame
multiple times. But most importantly, it's an alien metal that he is an expert at the use in. So he knows all this stuff about it. And they establish that this is not a reboot of the character. They established that he has this history, even though we don't know why he's at. But they've established that this is a character that's been around for a while, yet he doesn't know that he can't set fire to his own alien metal costume.
Yeah, you know, that we know is not flammable. It's odd. I don't know. It's very strange. And that, to me, is what dragged it right down. I mean, other than that, I mean, it's pretty cool, you know, alien artifact, you know, pretty cool alien creatures. You know, I guess, you know, he tries to kick a bit of butt, but in the end can't. It's all pretty standard, but overall I found it kind of boring. That didn't really do it for me at all. And I wasn't that big a Hawkman fan to begin with anyway. I actually prefer Hawk Girl. So, yeah, overall I gave it 2 licks.
I agree with everything you said, and I think a better story would have been the story about what led him to that point to want to burn the costume.
Yeah, agree.
They should have written that one instead. 2 licks.
Yeah, there's not much more I can say in praise. Sorry, Tonya Daniel. You know, you're just not that good. look, we've all said, you know, we've all praised the colour work of
Sunny Go
and Philip Tan, and really that's the only saving grace of the book, because the character work isn't there, even the history work isn't there. You know, we're meant to believe that Carter Hall is an archaeologist, so where is that? You know, they're trying to go more for the Indiana Jones thing, but forgetting that Indiana Jones also had a love of history and would tell us about the history. So where's that for Carter Hall? Where's the interest and the love of, you know, history and archaeology and culture and things like that? It just seems to be, oh my God, I don't want to be Hawkman. Oh, I'm going on this strange expedition. Oh, I'm Hawkman again. Cool, I'll fight. Yeah, it's just bad. 0 looks.
Wow. Not even any for the art.
Maybe 1 look. Alright, I will retract my earlier statement. 1 look for Philip Tan's artwork.
On you, Philip. Okay, so the last one in this group, and to finish off our epic coverage of DC's New 52, I have myself with Voodoo. First off, let me get the standards out of the way, the creative team. Story by Ron Mars, with art and cover by Sammy Basri. And just for the hell of it, I'll throw on the colorist, Jessica Colleen, something like that, but a cool name anyway. Okay, where to begin? Listeners of the last episode will know exactly how I feel about the portrayal of the majority of female characters in this reboot. It hasn't affected everyone, but the majority of female characters have been portrayed as over-the-top caricatures of comic females popular in the 90s. They are the perfect female fantasy for DC's target audience. Remember the 13 to 21 male. The sexy, perfectly proportioned, bodied personifications of their sexual fantasies. Catwoman almost bursting out of her costume, and Starfire, poor Starfire, who just wants to take you to her bed and won't bother you with little things like emotional attachment or even knowing your name afterwards. The perfect girl. Now the Starfire situation still stands to me as the worst example of this, but Voodoo is a very close second. Here we have an African-American female with her own title. Something to celebrate, surely. Yet how do we first encounter our main character? Half naked and on all fours with her boobs hanging out. That's right, she's a stripper. An exotic dancer, whatever you want to call them, I don't care. Now to be fair, Voodoo was a former stripper in her previous incarnation when she was part of the Wildcats. But that's no reason to keep her as one in this new universe. Why couldn't she have been a scientist, or a doctor, or an engineer? I mean, they changed Caitlin. Why couldn't they have changed her? I mean, it's a reboot. Why not give her some other sort of job? What advantage exactly does being a stripper give her in her mission? There's a line mentioned about being a good place to learn about men with their defences down, and later there's a tidbit that some of them might be high up in the military, you know, echelons with juicy military secrets to reveal. But this is a very weak excuse. Surely she would have had a better success telepathically gleaming military secrets as a secretary or an aide to one of these military guys in the actual military itself. Anything would have been better than just shimmying her boobs at them. What man is going to be thinking about their top secret info while they're looking at a gorgeous naked woman? More likely they're thinking about how much they want to have sex with her. Really helpful to her mission, that must be. Maybe it's not part of her strategy. Maybe she just likes being a stripper. But I'm tired of hearing that female empowerment crap used by some to justify their objectification of other human beings, or by the strippers or exotic dancers themselves in order to cover their own self-loathing. There is even a scene in the comic where the other strippers all discuss why they do what they do. It is so weak. Now, the art is actually very cool, strangely enough. It's quite realistic. It's very well done. The plotting and storytelling is actually quite good. But I've just got to point out, the art is actually in some ways too good. I mean, Voodoo herself, it is portrayed as the perfect woman. I mean, she starts off with an introduction by the MC or whatever, the DJ or whatever the hell he's meant to be, I don't know, as the perfect woman. So, wow, she's so perfect. She couldn't possibly be human. And, of course, sure enough, she isn't. She is whatever she is, an alien, demon, knight, whatever it is, turns out to be, I don't know. So what a great message this must be for any young female readers that could possibly be reading this. We discussed before about what title we thought could be actually pointed to the young female readers. Well, I hope to Christ it isn't this. I'll end with some positives just because I'm a rant, so I'm getting a bit emotional. So, like I said, the artwork is quite good. The colouring is also quite good. The female agent, I can't remember her name, but she was pretty cool, kicked a bit of butt. And, of course, didn't take her clothes off, which is a bonus. And Voodoo's Daemonite or alien or whatever form that she eventually has at the end, that does look really, really cool. Sort of, they obviously went to a lot of detail in terms of, like, her fingers are segmented and stuff like that, like a lizard and stuff. She looks like a humanoid Komodo dragon or something, which I actually thought she looked pretty groovy. But overall, this issue is right down there with Red Hood and Catwoman for me. And it's such a shame because it could have been so much more. I give this 0.5 loops, and only because the artwork was really that good. The rest of it was a disgrace.
Here's my review of Voodoo. Our main character. She's on her hands and knees on page 1. Well, page 2, she's spreading her legs. Page 3, she's taking her top off. But we see it artistically in the reflection of another character's glasses. Page 4, she's now naked. Oh, and here's some more boobies from some other characters that are also in the bar. Wow, this issue is just getting better and better as it goes along. Then we disappear and head off to another character, which is the female agent, and yeah, wow, she's actually interesting. That certainly puts her ahead of Voodoo by a substantial amount, but she's not the main character. Oh, then we're back with Voodoo, and she's still wearing next to nothing. But now we're getting a bit of characterization of her and the other strippers. And then pretty much as the issue progresses, there's our main character again. What's she doing? Wow, she's stripping yet again. But this time it's one-on-one stripping. And more gratuitous breast shots and butt shots. And she takes her clothes off and takes some more clothes off. And that's pretty much the character. Oh, and let's finish it off with, you know, a bit of combined violence to go with our sex as well. Because that's what the kids love. This issue is absolutely abysmal. There's no real characterization of Voodoo at all other than she's a stripper, and then she turns into an alien, I suppose, demon, whatever it's meant to be. There's nothing to her character. The only interesting character is this other agent, who I'm assuming is meant to be a supporting cast, and when your supporting cast member is completely overshadowing the main character, there's something wrong with the writing of the book. It's slow, it's boring, I don't find the character interesting, and I'm not turned on by two-dimensional depictions of characters in comic books, so I just don't understand what the point of this book is at all, other than to titillate, you know, 13-year-old boys or whatever. I am actually embarrassed that DC produced this book in the same way that I was embarrassed that they produced Catwoman and embarrassed that they produced Starfire in Red Hood and the Outlaws. Now, I'm not saying that sexuality shouldn't be in comics. I mean, let's face facts. These are idolized forms, and that's a staple of it. But when stripping is the only aspect of the character that they present in an issue, I think that's a seriously flawed writing. And I agree with what Dave said. This was a really good opportunity to create an interesting book centered around a black female character. And instead, they give us pages and pages of her stripping. And I just can't believe this issue even got published. It gets zero loops from me.
I might just point out, too, she doesn't even look black. And until she was mentioned she was mixed race, I didn't realise she was.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But I have to agree with everything that's been said. I gave it 0.5 loops, and only because the more interesting female agent character beats up the thugs with all her clothes on.
Yeah, she was Catwoman. She'd have a boob hanging out.
Yeah.
But fortunately, Voodoo has that covered in this issue.
Okay. I take issue with one thing that Dave said earlier on in relation to the creative team, in that, you know, he called them a creative team, and that couldn't be further from the truth with this. In that, yes, the story is by Ron Mars and the art is by Sam Basri, but there's nothing creative about this book whatsoever. It is god-awful, but look, going away from a lot of what has been said, because I can't actually add to it, one of my chief problems is the decompressed nature of the book. Okay, it's partly because they are more interested in showing, you know, titillating shots of naked female anatomy instead of actually the artist and the writer doing their job and pushing the story forward. They instead go on, you know, longer lingering shots on each page. It's that decompressed style which I really hate, because instead of actually speeding up the story and making it more cinematic, it actually slows the story right down and nothing ever happens. And nothing happens in this book. The only thing that could be said to happen is that she reveals herself to be an alien, and that's about it. Yes, there is a fight scene with some thugs, and it makes the supporting female character look a lot stronger. However, the things around those two incidents are actually quite banal and quite boring. There is nothing to recommend about this book. Whatever, at all. I give this zero looks.
What's really interesting, though, is that online, this book is actually getting praised. The same people that were attacking Catwoman and the depiction of Starfire in Red Hood seem to be suggesting that this book actually deserves praise and that it's the context in which it's set and so on, and I just don't get that.
So I'm so tired of that. It's this whole, you know, exotic dancers or whatever, they need to do what they need to do in order to, you know, survive and support their families and all that sort of rubbish, and it's empowerment and all that sort of crap. It's just not. I mean, it's just page after page of rubbish.
So there's the thing. If the guy from Empowerment, why can't they just write and depict females as being strong people?
Yeah.
And I don't mean
Wonder Woman's not a stripper.
I don't mean in terms of physical strength. I just mean in terms of strength of character.
Strength of character. I'm totally with you.
Well, let's take this in a different context. What if the first issue of Batman or Superman opened with Bruce Wayne in a strip club or Clark Kent in a strip club, you know, doing manpower style action?
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same thing.
Yeah, people would be outraged about it, you know, or, you know, if the, you know, what if the Red Hood book even had opened with, you know, Speedy and, Arsenal. I shouldn't call him Speedy. But, it opened with Speedy and Red Hood stripping in a club. I mean, why is it that, you know, that female characters stripping in clubs seems to have leeway with fans? It just seems sad to me that that's their, you know, that these middle-aged male writers seem to think that the only way that they can depict, you know, strong female characters is by, you know, overt sexuality.
And the fans' justification for that being it is empowering and liberating, when it's kind of like, well, it's not.
No.
Instead of gaining a, you know, an interesting perspective on Voodoo, even if you're going to keep her a stripper, then I'd like to know, okay, is there any reason for it, motivation, psychological, bring something to that. Yeah. Instead it's just, you know, gratuitous pain.
That is so totally right. If it was a character study about why she does what she does, I would have said, sweet. No problem. But her excuse for doing it, because she reads their minds and stuff, because their barriers are down.
And I don't mean to excuse, you know, the quite gratuitous nature of the artwork, because the gratuitous nature of the artwork is, I think, pitiable at best. And I don't feel like I'm reading a comic here. I feel like I should be, you know, tucking this away under my coat and stealing off into the dark of night.
It's porn for 13-year-old boys. Yes. Can't get to the porn. Yeah. Although there is the internet.
But there is no motivation whatsoever. Yeah.
Look, even if the stripping scenes had only been a couple of pages and drawn in a way that wasn't, oh, look, here's the main character with their breasts hanging out, then I could have gone, well, I'm not, you know, it's not great, but at least, you know, they're trying to do something. But no, it's just 20 pages of a character stripping. And then when the guy's just getting to the height of his excitement, she turns into a monster and kills him. It's like out of those bad exploitation horror movies you see. It's just sad.
It was not a surprising scene, was it?
No, not at all. You couldn't see
that one coming.
Yeah, you know, it's...
Okay, so we better end it on a bit of a sour note, but that's it. That's our wrap-up of the New 52. As this is released, some of the number twos for the first batch are actually coming out. So...
Yep.
Stormwatch and Action, Animal Man,
Swamp Thing,
Swamp Thing,
OMAC,
OMAC, yeah, Detective. So Batwing,
yep,
yeah, so check them out. I mean, let's hope.
Except for Batwing and Detective,
I didn't mind Batwing too. I actually thought it was right. But you know, I like the best one, so that's right.
I think the most important thing to take away from this is that it has generated excitement within the comic industry. It's gotten lapsed readers returning.
Yep.
I've read a lot of the retailer reviews online from the comic owners, and they're saying that they're getting readers who haven't been in for read comics for 5 to 10 years are coming back in because of the interest in this.
Yep.
They're seeing new readers coming in. You know, numbers on all of the sales of the book. The books are all going into second, third, fourth printings. So the numbers are high. We haven't even seen what the result of the day and date digital releases are yet. But I think it's already, we can declare this a big success in the short term.
Huge.
You know, and that's just got to be great for the industry to get these high numbers, to get these new people coming in. And I do have to applaud, whilst I don't agree with the way DC did all of these books, I do compliment them for actually creating genuine interest from people and from getting new and lapsed readers back into the comic stores again. I think that's fantastic.
It is fantastic. I agree. I may disagree with some of their creative decisions, but they've done what they set out to do. And that's, you know, revitalize the industry. And there's nobody who says that they haven't done that.
And it's worked. The Diamond's top 100 listings have just come in, and they've got 8 of the top 10.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
And the first 7 are all DC, so
yeah. So it's a good thing for the industry, and hopefully, I mean, yeah, there's been some bad picks, but hopefully this, you know, the increase in industry awareness will now mean that other creators who actually have good ideas can, you know, come forward and make their books and be successful. So it's good. It can only lead to good things in the future. Well, thank you for joining us on our new DC 52 extravaganza.